Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Nick Augustine, and this is the Illinois Professional Licensing Consultants monthly podcast interview. On this program, we feature a variety of attorneys and experts in many areas of health law and litigation, as well as the regulation of healthcare professionals. Today's podcast interview with Dr. Karen Nichols focuses on osteopathic medicine and how osteopaths are different from traditional medical doctors. In the next 30 minutes, Karen will talk to us about the whole person approach to osteopathic medicine, treatment, and care. Learn about the rise of awareness and practice of osteopathic medicine and what we may anticipate in the future of comprehensive, holistic healthcare. An overview of the current and future osteopathic medicine with Dr. Karen Nichols. That is our title for today. A few of the topics we're going to cover. We'll talk about similarities and differences between MDs and osteopathic physicians. We'll also talk about a rise in osteopathic in the profession and an increase in women osteopaths. Also, we'll highlight some features of the Institute of Medicine of Chicago and its role in osteopathic medicine, as well as career opportunities in and the future of osteopathic medicine. Again, I'm here with Dr. Karen J. Nichols, and she is the Dean of the Midwestern University Chicago College of Osteopathic Medicine. Prior to serving as dean, she was assistant dean, as well as postdoctoral education and division director, and internal medicine at Midwestern University / Arizona College of Osteopathic Medicine. Dr. Nichols is also a graduate of Kansas City University College of Osteopathic Medicine with a DO degree and an honorary doctorate of humane letters. She has a master's degree in management with a specialty in healthcare administration from Central Michigan University. As well, Dr. Nichols served as president of the American Osteopathic Association, president of the Arizona Osteopathic Medical Association, and president of the American College of Osteopathic Internists. She is presently on the board of Osteopathic International Alliance. As a way of general disclaimer, as we move forward, the general information we share on this program does not constitute legal or medical or professional advice. Any communication with our guest does not give rise to professional relationships. And if you have specific questions about any of our content on today's program, you should call the Illinois Professional Licensing Consultants at 773-631-4580 to get in touch with any of our guests. Of course, all rights to this broadcast are reserved, and it's time to say good afternoon to Dr. Karen Nichols.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be talking to you, Nick.
All right. Well, Dr. Nichols, I look forward to hearing more about osteopathic medicine. I know a 30,000-foot view, and when I was talking to you before the program, I noted that some of the research that I've done in this area, I find that this idea of holistic and an empathetic approach to medicine and the whole body approach is really something that I see more frequently and what seems to make such intuitive sense. So I look forward to learning a little bit more about the difference between what osteopaths can do as opposed to traditional, what we think of when we think of Western medical doctors, and so on and so forth. But let's get start with a little bit with your career. You've had a long career in healthcare. What drove you to osteopathic medicine as your passion?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to tell my story. I was never even considering becoming a physician, and I became a medical technologist with that bachelor's degree. And my first job was running a lab at Phoenix General Hospital, which turned out to be an osteopathic hospital. And after getting that master's degree that you spoke about in healthcare administration, I realized I was interested in higher education. So at 27, which is kind of late to go to medical school, I left for my career change, moving into osteopathic medicine. I was in private practice of internal medicine in Arizona for 17 years, and I've been the dean here at the Chicago College of Osteopathic Medicine. This is my 15th year.
So what about osteopathic medicine keeps you excited about the future of healthcare? What about osteopathic just makes it so special to you?
Well, it's an honor and a privilege to take care of a patient. As I always tell my medical students, there will always be patients and they will always need doctors. The appealing aspect of osteopathic medicine is we employ all of the modalities, all of the approaches of healthcare, medicine, surgery, delivering babies, and we do that in the context of the whole person, the whole patient. Osteopathic physicians have practice rights, full practice rights in all 50 states in the United States. We are in all specialties from, as I said, neurosurgery to ophthalmology, family medicine, delivering babies. I'm an internist, so I specialized in adult diseases. All osteopathic physicians are trained, however, to look at that patient as a whole person. The difference in osteopathic medicine and what we would call and is known as allopathic medicine is that philosophy. We partner with our patients, we emphasize prevention, and we engage the patient in an approach that looks at everything that makes them who they are. So we have the full practice of medicine from the perspective of the patient, and that was a wonderful part of my practice, and I love being able to teach more of our medical students to approach that person as a whole patient.
Well, and the way that I understand it, by approaching that person as a whole patient, we might have the opportunity to stumble upon things that potentially are causing ailments. And I think of the show Dr. House MD. And I always think about the people who had something wrong with them, and they'd find out that it was some environmental cause, some chemical they're using at home, something they're allergic to. Very different kind of, in that show, I know it's just TV, but different way to look at things as opposed to a person comes in to see the doctor and they have a list of symptoms and the doctor is treating the symptoms. And that's the way when I look at it, as I don't have a medical background, but when I look at it, that's how I appreciate the differences between MDs and osteopathic physicians. So can we talk a little more about what the differences might be in the approach, also the treatment, what they study? What are some of the differences that we might not even know to ask if we're not in the medical field ourselves?
And you're raising some important points. What the osteopathic physician is going to do is to try to understand more about what the patient brings to the table, what they bring to that visit. For example, back pain may be due to a muscle strain, but it also may be due to something that's happening in the stomach area that refers the pain to the back. It may also be due to shingles. It may be due to a whole host of things, and the osteopathic physician needs to evaluate what that back pain feels like. Is it tight? Is it on the same on both sides? Does the pain occur more when you're pushing on the back? Does it occur more when you're pushing on the front? Maybe there's some blood tests that need to be ordered. Certainly X-rays may be ordered. But as you discuss, getting the understanding of how did this start and what was the patient doing and what was maybe different that the patient was doing or was experiencing is a really important part of this. I can tell you a story about one of my graduates who is an emergency medicine physician in a very big institution that you would know if I said the name of it on the East Coast. And she sent me an email and she said, you know, I had to share this case with you because a woman in her 30s came in and she was having, in this case, stomach pain. And she had no symptoms other than just that pain. However, which is something they see in emergency medicine all the time. She said the thing that stopped me was the fact that she didn't want pain medicine, which is very different than what most patients that come to the emergency room with just a very general comment about pain. It's a different approach. So she said, I couldn't really find any reason for the pain. I couldn't find any specific connection for the pain in any way. And so she said, I got out my osteopathic medicine muscle books, and she said, I started to feel how the back muscles were cramping, even though that wasn't what the patient was complaining about. And she said, I found the tightness in an area where the gallbladder nerves go to carry the information up to the brain. She said, I had no symptoms that would be related to gallbladder, but when she ran the gallbladder test, that the person had gallstones. It was an unusual presentation, but because she was an osteopathic physician, she kept pushing and pushing in her mind to figure out there must be something going on here that's unusual, because that patient did not just want pain medicine and go away. She wanted to know what was the problem. And she said it was a very unusual example, but I think it makes the point that the osteopathic physician is going to look for the cause. And I'm not trying to beat up my allopathic colleagues. We have many MDs who teach for us. The difference is the philosophy that osteopathic medicine brings to whatever area of medical practice a physician may be in.
And what a very remarkable story that you tell, especially where you saw someone coming in and says, I don't want pain meds. Had they come in and said, you know, load me full of narcotics, send me on my way, maybe they wouldn't have felt the pain anymore, but you're not getting at what's wrong. And so one of the concerns I hear about quite frequently is the mixture of different medications, especially when things are prescribed and we're trying different things until we find out what really works correctly. So I appreciate why a lot of people are kind of averse to too many meds. And also when you tell the story, it makes one of the things in my head, it sounds to me like luxury health care. This must be something you have to have the best insurance for or lots of money. If you walk into the ER at the hospital down the street from me, I don't know that you're going to get that kind of treatment. I don't know whether as a layperson that I would ask for an osteopathic doctor, or is this making it an outpatient? I mean, you're talking about the ER. So how does this all really work?
Well, I'm glad you asked a simple question, Nick. I would say the emergency medicine example is for the purpose of giving an explanation of looking at the bigger picture with the patient, the patient-centered approach. When you go into emergency room, you're going to have emergency department, you're going to have access to whatever kind of physician is going to be available. Where you're going to have a choice, and where we encourage people to consider choices, is when you are checking into who might be the person you want to have providing your overall continuity of care. An osteopathic physician, we have more osteopathic physicians, a higher percentage rather, in primary care So they're more likely going to become a family physician or an internist, as I am, or a pediatrician, because they are the people who go into osteopathic medicine frequently want to have that whole patient approach with primary care. So in that situation where you're going to pick out who's going to be monitoring you and your family on a long-term ongoing basis, that's where you should have the choice of either an MD or a DO based on who you connect with best and allowing you to have the option to say, I want to see how a DO would approach this and make that connection for my long-term health care.
And also with the rise in osteopathic medicine, it may be easier today than ever to go through, especially when we're looking at our insurance companies and who we can pick as a provider, which can be somewhat limiting at times. So can we talk a little bit about the rise of the osteopathic profession and its prevalence, how easy it may be to find a good osteopathic doctor, and also the increase in women going into osteopathic medicine?
Sure. There are now over 100,000 osteopathic physicians in the United States. By comparison, there are about 900,000 MDs in the United States. So we're roughly 11% of all physicians in the United States. The percentage of osteopathic physicians who are women is at about 40%, and that's continuing to rise as the percentage of applicants to actually allopathic and osteopathic schools in the United States is running close to 40 to 50% of the total applicant pool. So the number of osteopathic physicians rises every year, and there is an increasing prevalence of women in osteopathic medicine. I found being a woman in osteopathic medicine was a huge advantage because when I started practice, there weren't very many women physicians available at all. Now, nearly half of the people in medical school in the osteopathic colleges are women. So you will have an increasing availability of women to choose from.
And when another thing that struck me when you were telling your story, looking at all of the different aspects in healthcare, not just one approach, but this multi-tiered holistic approach, does that require, what schooling is involved? Is it the same as to get the DO as an MD? What are some differences? Are there things that the DOs get that the MDs don't?
We have the same length of time of the curriculum, four years of medical school when coming in with a bachelor's degree. So it would be 4 years of college, 4 years of medical school, and then the DO and the MD are eligible to enter into residency to specialize. The 4 years of medical school has the same courses of anatomy, physiology, pharmacology, learning about drugs and surgery and such. But the difference is that at the College of Osteopathic Medicine, there are going to be courses in osteopathic medicine, in the diagnosis of osteopathic approaches, in the treatments, the different kinds of ways that you can treat osteopathic problems. I would say there are between 200 and 500 more hours in the curriculum on this topic that the MD doesn't get in their medical education.
So The baseline in the core is all the same. And that's something that I think people might not realize. It's something I didn't know. And as we look at learning more and awareness, we turn also to organizations who are really good at getting the word out there, spreading the word, and educating the healthcare public and consumers of different treatment options. So as you explained earlier, when you look for your continuity of care medical health professional, you can make that educated choice. Let's talk a little bit about, and can you tell me what the Institute of Medicine of Chicago is and its role in explaining, sharing, and increasing awareness of osteopathic medicine as well as the other things that the IMOC does?
You bet. We're very proud of the Institute of Medicine of Chicago. It was started in 1915 by 29 MDs who said we can do better. In fact, at the time, there were 19 different medical schools in Chicago, and the evaluation of all medical schools in the United States called Chicago the plague spot of the nation. So those 29 MDs said, I think we can do a better job. So they first focused on things like providing ambulance services, which were non-existent, promoting the use of autopsies that were not being done in the days before x-rays really helped us make more diagnosis and lab tests and such. The Institute of Medicine has done two things. It has branched out into more health professions, so it brings together physicians and dentists and pharmacists and PhDs and nurses and lawyers and CPAs and public relations people that work in the health environment at different television stations. It covers the waterfront of anyone who might be involved at a high level in the healthcare arena. So this is an organization that then was in the forefront of the patient safety movement, and now it is very heavily involved in approaches that will decrease the healthcare disparities and health inequities that are going on. And it has expanded, secondly, out of just Chicago, and it goes to the entire Chicago metropolitan region. So we are bringing together individuals that are committed to our mission, which is to improve the health of the citizens and residents of the Chicagoland area. So this last year, we just celebrated our 100th anniversary, and we had a major grants writing program that gave away $350,000 to 12 different organizations to work improving the leadership of community health workers that are vital to healthcare in the United States today. And 8 of those grants went to address healthcare disparities in very basic ways, like sending out text messages to diabetic patients to get them to check their blood levels and report them. The grants program has been a really wonderful thing that the Institute of Medicine has done.
Right. I mean, sending text messages out and the way that we communicate is changing every day. And the applications, you know, at first it was, you know, text messaging. I always think is so interesting because, you know, originally we all thought it was just for children and, you know, kids telling mom or dad, I'm on my way home from school. And, you know, now it's just about everything we get through text and letting people know about getting the word out. I can't stress that enough because, again, if you've only gone through one way of one path of the healthcare system your entire life, you may not know until you are sick or have a problem that there are different options. And this holistic approach is preventative as well, as far as I can see, making sure that everything is going right and looking at the entire, all the different systems. Now, as also, so we're looking at this, I could see that those who have been dissuaded from healthcare careers through, you know, a variety of reasons that they may think twice about it, this might really be of interest to those looking for careers in healthcare. You know, on this program, we also talk frequently about Mike Favia's work in healthcare licensing and all the regulatory issues that do come along. So if you could, Dr. Nichols, talk a little bit about the career opportunities, the elements of licensing the profession, I'm assuming very similar to traditional medical doctors, and you know, what we really can expect to see in the future of osteopathic medicine, especially as the baby boomer generation continues to be more frequent patients and consumers of healthcare services.
I appreciate your perspective. Career opportunities for osteopathic physicians are wide open. As I said earlier, there will always be people who want to be healthier and sick people who want to be better, and so there will always be a need for physicians. And what we're seeing, as you said, I'm the dean of the Chicago College of Osteopathic Medicine at Midwestern University. We have 200 seats in every class, and this year we had over 8,000 applications for those 200 seats. And the people who apply to my school, and I'm sure to other colleges of osteopathic medicine, say they want to provide medical care and they want to do it with a patient-centered preventative emphasis. And they want to have that opportunity to partner with their patients. So those are, if also, as you mentioned, licensing, those are effective approaches in keeping your license, and you know very well what I'm referring to. There are 70 licensing boards, medical licensing boards in the United States. So some states license MDs and DOs with one board, and some states have separate boards licensing them. Getting the license is one thing. Maintaining your license is yet another. And I also happen to sit on the board of a medical malpractice company, and the poor communications between a physician and their patients contributes to physicians losing their license. This is something, I don't mean that DOs have it all figured out, but the osteopathic physician works in partnering with the patient. So they're going to have good communications with the patients, and nobody is perfect. No physician has the corner on making every accurate medical decision, but patients expect that you're going to talk to them, you're going to partner with them, and you are going to have their best interest at heart. And those are the kind of approaches that keep them out of my world in the medical malpractice arena and encourage more people to consider having an osteopathic physician as their choice.
There's so many different elements to the decisions in healthcare on so many levels, and I really appreciate your time, Dr. Nichols, sharing some of these concepts so that we can share them with those who might not know all about osteopathic medicine, or that it's even something that they can look into. And also from a career perspective, I appreciate that there's a really increased opportunity to sort of, as you look at it as a vocation, the practice of medicine, and seeing the involvement and really knowing these people as patients, and not just as patients, but as, you know, human beings. And, you know, it's sort of, for me, it makes me think more of the cradle to grave, you know, healthcare, where the same doctor who delivers the baby then sees the, you know, them as a child, as a young adult, and, you know, as they're, it's something that we just don't see as much anymore. So for me, at least, the osteopathic medical world seems to be a really good and traditional, yet as we I don't want to call it only traditional, but a progressive yet traditional combination of everything that we might need. It just seems to make a lot of sense to me, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at.
I don't think I could say it any better, Nick.
Right. Well, there you go. All right. Well, that's why we do these programs, and we like to inform people and let them learn. Dr. Nichols, if people want to learn more about career opportunities in osteopathic medicine, what's a good way for them to get a hold of you to continue this dialogue?
Oh, sure. Actually, the first thing I would suggest is they go to osteopathic.org or they go to AACOM.org, and those would be the best places to start, and they can certainly get on midwestern.edu, and they'll find me there, Karen Nichols.
All right, very good. I want to again thank Dr. Nichols as well as all the people who listen to this podcast and help share this information with those who are looking for the tips and tools they need to better understand healthcare, the healthcare industry, and also the professional licensing and regulatory questions for those who do practice healthcare in several different shapes and forms. Of course, anyone who wants to find out more information about any Illinois professional licensing consultants or professionals within the network of the Favia Law Firm and its friends and allies, please give a call, 773-631-4580. Again, that number, area code 773-631-4580. I want to thank you all for sharing these programs when finding them on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, or wherever you may find them, because we never know who in our world is looking for exactly this type of information, and it's an opportunity for us to help collectively share and educate one another. Again, Dr. Karen Nichols, thank you for your time today. I've appreciated having you on as a guest.
Thank you.
All right, and thank you, everyone, and we'll be back next month. This again was Nick Augustine with Dr. Karen Nichols on behalf of Illinois Professional Licensing Consultants and the law firm of Michael V. Fabian Associates in Chicago. Everyone have a great day. Thank you all.